following interview was recorded in the year 2017 by the Gawler Community Broadcasting Association as part of the Gawler Oral History Interview Project.
My session is called Just Let's Talk.
Yep.
And I'm talking with Jack Butcher today, who's going to talk to us about his trip to China. Okay, and let us know what that was like. Okay.
Yeah, with China was definitely a very interesting trip. It's definitely very different than Australia, and it's definitely out of, as I said, when you first go, it's out of your comfort zone a little bit. But yeah, you sort of you live there for a while, because I lived there for 2 months, and you sort of slowly get used to the lifestyle, and then you sort of, you know, you actually find that your language skills improve and things like that occur. So it's really interesting. Yeah.
So did you study China?
Yeah, I studied Chinese at Trinity College in Gawler there, and I had a teacher who assisted me with my studies, and I was only 16 years old, and at the time I was lacking direction, and the teacher sort of pushed me in the right direction and said, well, this is obviously your talent, is language. So I picked up Chinese language quite quickly, and then, yeah, so it sort of started off as a very, very difficult process, because learning Chinese is very difficult. But after a while, you actually learn how to write the characters and the pronunciation, and it just comes easy after that, yeah.
Okay, so how soon after you finished school did you end up going on your trip to China?
The first time I went to China was in 2015. I won a Confucius Institute scholarship at the University of Adelaide. There's a department at the University of Adelaide which gives out scholarships regularly, and so I applied for one, and I got this scholarship, so I went with all university fees paid for 6 months to trip to China. I lived in a place called Sichuan, where the food is very, very spicy. And also in Sichuan, it's very well known for the panda complex as well. And so you used to get to go see all the pandas and everything like that. So, yeah, it was really, really, really interesting.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah, so after you went overseas through the university... You returned again?
Yes, I did. I returned briefly for about 8 months.
Okay. Mm. What got you into doing that? Did you go there for a particular reason? Was there something that you wanted to look at, or you just wanted to immerse yourself in the culture?
Yeah, I sort of wanted to immerse myself, but I also think I went over there for certain spiritual reasons as well, because there's always been a very big attraction with me and Chinese culture, but it took me a very, very long time to actually realise what it was. So I went to China, and I found myself in fairly interesting lifestyle that I'd actually never expected. So I found their life is very fast. The pace of life is quick. There's traffic everywhere. There's people everywhere. There's barbecue stands everywhere. People wanting to buy you stuff, you know. So, as I said, it's very different than Australia. So I found myself in, at the time, I was fairly accustomed to a lot of Chinese customs and ways. But at the time, I thought, wow, I really am in a different place now. Mm.
Yeah. So where did you stay in China?
So when I first went to China in 2015, I stayed in Sichuan province in a place called Chengdu. There's quite a few Westerners who probably would be very, very familiar with the word Sichuan, which is usually done in cooking. And it's the name of the province that I lived in. And the province has got roughly 120 million people in it alone, which would be the population of, say, Japan almost, just living in the size of a place the size of Victoria. So it is very, very cramped in, and it's very green, and it's a very, very beautiful place to go to.
Okay, so were you staying in a special complex, or were you in a hotel or accommodation?
I stayed in a university dormitory for 6 months. So I got to know a lot of students from around the world, different types of people, and Chinese and Westerners as well, and a few people from Africa and Europe and other Asian countries. So I stayed in the complex, and this university complex in the dormitories, which was quite interesting at first, because there's so many people from so many different places, and it was just like a big international community in one place.
So you stayed in a university complex. I just wanted to know what your personal experience was of the Chinese people when you were travelling around China.
I tend to find that my personal Chinese people are very, very hospitable, and they are very hard-working people. They will go out of their way to assist you. They will go out of their way to sometimes even invite you around for dinner to their house. And I tend to find that travelling around China, they're very proud of their country, but they're also very, very welcoming to foreigners. So it was definitely very, very enlightening to know that they can sort of, certain perceptions that we have of the West of the Chinese, for me, all these perceptions were just sort of gone. So, yeah, basically I found them to be very hospitable and very, very kind people.
Yeah. So when you were travelling around, how did you get around China?
I mostly got around by walking mostly because traffic is a bit of an issue because there are a lot of cars and everywhere you go there's a car or there's a scooter or there's some kind of truck. So it's sort of, traffic becomes clogged. Chinese people don't usually follow any traffic rules, or so that they sometimes will go through red lights, and sort of when the walking signs on for the pedestrians, the green light, they will just go right through and won't pay much attention to it. But apart from that, also we tend to find as well, the Chinese government's encouraging walking and riding on bicycles and scooters because cars, I believe, contributes to a large portion of their pollution. So they're trying their hard, the Chinese government are trying to enact policies and are trying to enact clauses where they can actually sort of control this issue with car ownership. Yeah, they're trying to ensure that the issue with pollution is being solved.
Right. Did you go on many train trips in China? Or?
I went on train trips quite often. They got high-speed rail and they've got the normal trains, sort of the slow trains as well. High-speed rail is very interesting because it's really fairly modern. And you tend to find a lot of Chinese with money tend to take the high-speed rail. But I've travelled on the regular train once, and the regular train is very interesting because you come across people from all kinds of different backgrounds. People who bring on big bags of in a big plastic bag they drape over their shoulder and they carry it onto the train, and all of a sudden they open up this big bag and there's all this stuff in there. There could be clothes, and in other bags there would be wheat or stuff that they've sort of picked up from their crops. So yeah, you come across it, all kinds of different people in Chinese society.
Yeah, and so on these daily trips, where were some of the places that you went to?
So I visited the Great Wall when I was in Beijing, and I visited the Temple of Heaven. Usually we took guided tours in vans. So that was an interesting experience being on the Chinese freeway because certain people drive a lot quicker than the speed limit says. And also experiencing China's different variety of vehicles that they have. So you tend to find there are a lot of BMWs on the road, a lot of Mercedes is on the road, a lot of luxury vehicles. But you also tend to find there's a lot of scooters. People tend to use scooters to get around if they need to sort of go to places that they sort of want to go to different sites and see. When I was in Xi'an, it was all in another one in the van too. Sometimes I'd take a bus. There'd be other times where I'd just ride a bike around or I'd just walk to places. So yeah, so different types of transport were very, very enlightening to know.
And what did you think of the temple that you went to?
The Temple of Heaven, yeah. It was really interesting because that day we went there, it was 5 degrees below zero. They were doing an old cultural performance where they sort of welcomed the emperor, and sort of with all the gongs and all the different types of musical instruments that were sort of they sort of used. It was very, very interesting to see because this Temple of Heaven, back fairly long time ago, roughly about 2,000 years, they used to perform sacrifices in the temple. And in this place, sort of the history, to look at something that is broadcasted so much on tourist sites and on websites and web pages and sort of the icons of China, to actually be there and see them is sort of an amazing experience.
Mm. And what's another place that you went to that you really liked?
I liked the Terracotta Warriors. I thought Terracotta Warriors were very, very interesting. They were lifelike and they sort of come out on their own. It was very interesting because they're sort of 1.8 metres tall They're fairly, they're sort of standing straight line, and they've got, their appearances are all very, very different. So every warrior has a different appearance. And you can sort of see by the different types of their hairstyles what rank they had. So you can see the generals, some of the commanders, some of the sort of lieutenants, and then you can see some of the just the general infantry as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how, do you know how they were found?
The Qin Emperor, quite a long time ago, he established his own empire. So he believed he had the mandate from heaven to go and conquer all the different territories around China. So he believed he was, God had given him this inborn ability. So he ended up conquering China. And for many, many years before his death, he had actually ordered slaves, which were groups of many people just gathered from countrysides, to build his tomb. And in this tomb complex, people nowadays don't know what his tomb actually sort of is inside, because they can't drill into it, because they're actually very, very worried about sort of it losing its sort of, if oxygen comes in contact with some of the paints that they're using. And so it's sort of shaped like a pyramid in some ways, the mound that he's buried at. And he had a very, very, very strong fear of death. It's his largest phobia. So he sent all these different people around China to gather all these kinds of elixirs from natural sources. One day, person, whether this is this had intent or not, he actually found mercury and actually gave it to the emperor, which ended up killing him. And he had all of his concubines buried alive with him in the tomb. So it was really, really interesting to see the sort of, as I said, the terracotta warriors and their role, because they stood in front, actually guarding the emperor in a long line of infantry. And the emperor believed that if the time came for him to be reborn or reawake again, these warriors would also awaken with it.
And can you tell me any other places that you went to that you were very impressed with?
I was very, very impressed with the state of the Panda Research Centre. I believe that their processes for panda reproduction is amazing, because now pandas aren't considered as much as they were 8 years ago to be endangered. There are a lot of pandas in the complex, and one day they're hopefully going to release these pandas into the wild and they can go back to their original habitats. But still there are certain issues facing sort of this kind of these programs, because of pollution, of course, and poaching. And a lot of people sort of feel that it's not safe for the pandas to go out there, but the Chinese government have placed restrictions on poaching and are also trying to limit the pollution, so people feel fairly confident that project would go ahead.
And meeting Chinese people on a daily basis, what did you feel they felt about their government and the way they are governed?
They feel that the way they're governed, they feel it's the government supplies them with what they need, and also nowadays they feel that the government is definitely giving them opportunities to sort of realise their potential. Chinese people feel that the government has their best interests at heart, which in a lot of ways is true. Contrary to a lot of Western media reporting, Chinese people actually feel liberated. They actually can they can actually voice their own opinion, and at times are allowed to actually speak against the government in certain areas that they feel aren't right. And a big example is, of course, the education reform that's currently the topic of an education reform that's going around China. A lot of people are sort of lobbying for changes to education because they believe it's fairly tough for the students to enter university. They believe it's too difficult. So they sort of had criticised certain government policies, and the government is hopefully in the process of responding with that. They have got a lot of responses back. And also on a level two, Chinese people are actually eligible to vote, even though it's not elections like we have here in Australia with different parties. Members of the Communist Party are allowed to vote for their local candidates and vote them into the Politburo. So there are quite a lot of people that sort of join the Communist Party to sort of express a different type of ideas. Usually it's through village elections. People will sort of gather together, listen to what one candidate has to say and another candidate has to say. It's all claim allegiance to the Communist Party, but there are certain people who want a bit more reform and democratisation. There's other people that feel that prefer the status quo. So they sort of are able to sort of voice their opinion, but yeah, they're not allowed to run independently, no.
And do you think that there's a difference in attitude from people who live in the country and the city?
I think overall people feel that the Chinese government is looking after their needs, so they feel that in the city they feel that, okay, they're provided with opportunities, people do go out and work. Also, the government does supply people with jobs. So if, say, for instance, this is an example, being my father-in-law, he used to work in a museum, and the Chinese government believed that he wasn't, well, the local provincial, not the local or county government, believed that his earning money wasn't enough. So they actually gave him another opportunity. They had said to him, okay, well, you can work in Beijing as doing advertising. So he went up to Beijing and worked in advertising and now earns quite a lot of money. So, yeah, so when certain situations arise, they definitely do act.
And while you're staying in the university complex, what were the sort of things that you liked to do with the students? Were they all students? And
there were people, they were mostly students. Yeah. There were a couple of lecturers as well that would live in the dormitories. Mostly we would go out and have food or go out and look at different places around when I was in Chengdu, when I was living there. We'd go to all these different shopping complexes. We'd go and have a look at all the... We'd go to cinemas, we'd go to certain tourist sites and sort of experience the local culture and, you know, that sort of stuff that we sort of enjoyed. And in China, food is central to their life, so having food with a Chinese person, it furthers relationships.
Yeah. And what was it about Chinese food that you like? Or what would be your favourite?
My favourite dish in China, well, when I was in China, was not exactly a dish, but it was the Chinese huoguo, which is the hot pot. And the hot pot, of course, is a traditional Sichuanese dish, and it's sort of put in a pot of water under an open fire, and it's a lot of spice added to it, a lot of chilies, and sort of you can put all different types of ingredients in there. So you've got meat, vegetables, fish, any kind of things you can put in there.
Did you get to know some of the people in the complex, some of their views about their government and the way they live and their culture? And
yeah, I got to know quite a lot of people through their Westerners and Chinese people. The Chinese mostly believe that, of course, the government's providing for them, so they feel that there's sort of not really a lot of issues that they have to really talk about. They would talk up, usually the only issue they'd really talk about, two issues mostly, would be economic inequality and issues with education, sort of a push for an educational reform. They believe that sort of their country, because they're quite proud of their history, and they feel that sort of their country is sort of very great because of all the achievements that they've had over the years. So they feel that, you know, for them this is the most important part of sort of being Chinese. So they're rather proud of their government, they're very proud of their system, they're very proud of their ideology. And however, that yeah, they openly do talk about issues that they do have. And the Westerners in there, however, is fairly divided. Some of the Westerners sort of go with what the Chinese believe. They believe, okay, you know, providing for them, so why need to come to China and cause any kinds of issues for the local people? But there are a group of Westerners in the university that were protesting and sort of like to question every little bit about what the Chinese government's doing, and were there to criticise. We can't be political all the time. We have to sort of understand that life, you know, we eat, we socialise, we do the best we can. So these type of Westerners found that there was a lot of issues for them to sort of integrate on and sort of interact with Chinese people. So people feel that in general, it's really a positive feeling I've noticed from most people. Mm.
Okay, and what do you think the Chinese people are proud of or about their country?
They're very proud of their culture, and they're very proud of their ideology, and they're very, very proud of their economic development and economic achievements. For the Chinese, they believe that economic development, sort of coming from what they were, you know, in the past, being considered to being looked down upon by a lot of Western powers, sort of having a lot of issues and a lot of famines and a lot of droughts and a lot of hardships, to now actually having a comfortable life. Chinese people feel that their life is fairly comfortable, and they don't have to worry too much about you know, tomorrow. They don't have to live for today. They can plan for the future. They feel comfortable in their lifestyle. However, you do now and again, there are quite a few people who will express concerns, and they do, and fairly warranted.
You were saying earlier about the terracotta warriors and that. Can you tell me some of the other things in China that the Chinese people are very proud of?
As I said, they're very, very proud of their history as well. They believe that being one of the first civilizations to be established around the world, and actually the first country to have an organized empire, they believe that this sort of their enlightenment, they believe that they're a fairly enlightened people, even though in modern history, in certain terms, they have had issues and have lagged behind, they've caught up, and they've caught up very quickly. So they look at the economic development, and they believe that that's what they're mostly proud of, is their economic development. They're very proud with their position in the world and in the international community. Chinese people feel that they are very decision makers in the world, instead of being looked down upon by Western powers. So they see that and they say, well, we've come from very humble beginnings, but now we can make decisions and influence the world.
And in the Western media, you see stories about the difference, though, between the very rich in China and the very poor. On a day-to-day basis, what do you think the people there actually feel about those differences?
Well, they feel there are definitely injustices in Chinese society. They do feel that the gap between the rich and poor is an issue. The government have tried despite a lot of criticism, their efforts have been in some ways fairly successful. However, there are few people, especially in the countryside, who are lagging behind, and that is being recognised. Also, they feel that the most important part of sort of being in society and sort of is expressing concerns, these kind of concerns, and the government usually do listen. Local provincial governments will try their hardest to ensure that people are satisfied. So nowadays you can see a lot of old country houses are being knocked down and put in place, the huge high-rise buildings. And these people don't have to sell their houses to the government when they get knocked down. The government just build it for them and let them move in for free. For them, it's fairly sort of life is fairly secure. No matter if you're a farmer or with a little income, or you're really, really rich, they still feel that nowadays, in the 21st century, that their life is fairly secure.
And what do you think about the relationship between China and Australia?
I think the relationship between China and Australia economically is developing very fast, and there are a lot of important parts and a lot of reliance on China economically for Australia. China is a strong industrial nation, and they supply a lot of our imports. The Australian economy relies on the Chinese economy fairly heavily. So Chinese people, or Australian people, feel that sort of all these imports from China, some people believe, oh, it's a good thing, others believe it's a bad thing. But economically, China has provided Australia with a lot of economic stability over the last 15 years, when certain countries were going into recessions and the global financial crisis in 2008. I think certain parts that could be improved, I believe, are cultural interaction between the two countries, and I think political relations can be improved dramatically. I believe that it's important for Chinese people and Australian people to connect and understand we're part of an international community. Australians can understand Chinese culture, and some Chinese can understand Australian culture despite their large population. At least if some Chinese understand Australia and Australians understand China, therefore we can sort of bridge a closer relations and more ties in that area.
So do you see that relationship is a positive one and that will grow in the future?
I believe it's a very positive relationship for Australia. There are a lot of benefits for Australians in the Chinese relationship, especially, as I said, with trade and business opportunities. People feel that Chinese, of course, have now established themselves on the global stage, so they feel that Australian businesses can come to China, earn a lot of money. Chinese businesses come to Australia and earn a lot of money. Even though there has been quite a lot of concerns about Chinese buying up investment properties in Australia and buying up large amounts of farmland in Australia. However, Chinese investment will continue to provide benefits for Australian people and benefits for Chinese people in the future, yes.
Mm-hmm. And after your trip to China, have you started studying now, or what is your future plan?
Well, I'm currently studying at the University of Adelaide and a Bachelor of International Studies. In the past I won a Confucius Institute scholarship to go to China on study, which is a department of the University of Adelaide. I have just won the Westpac Bicentennial Foundation Scholarship for 2017, which ensures that I will go to Tsinghua University, which is China's top university, to study for 6 months as an exchange student. And the Westpac Bicentennial Scholarship I'll be put into a leadership program. I'll also be part of a scholars network where I'll be able to sort of interact with people who've won the scholarship before. So job opportunities will be fairly easier to get because I've won this scholarship. I also believe that the future holds, well, Australian-China relations are fairly important to me. So I would love to become a diplomat in the Department of Foreign Affairs, maybe represent Australia's interests in China. Hopefully one day could become an ambassador of some kind, or even go into the political scene here in Australia for the Australian Labor Party. So sort of I have got quite a few certain ambitions, and it's good to aim high, but I'll definitely try the best to achieve my goals.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for having a talk with me today.
No worries. I appreciate it.
And I wish you all the best for the future.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
This interview, recorded in the year 2017 by the Gawler Community Broadcasting Association, is available for download for purposes of educational research. We expect that any creative written or electronic work derived from the recording gives due credit to the interviewee, interviewer, and GBA.